Morning, Elon. How are you?
Good morning, Rabbi. How are you?
Thank God. Good. Sorry for not coming on right after we play the song, but I hear the other song that you're playing, Etainai, which is also a... I just heard the tune as quick for a minute.
Yeah, it's a beautiful one, and since we cut it in the middle, we'll put it again at the end of the interview. So you can hear it at home.
Ah, okay. Wonderful, beautiful.
So, Parshat Emor.
Parshat Emor is a interesting parsha with a lot of different laws. The Torah, because Emor means, the actual word Emor means to speak.
Yeah.
So it begins with the special laws pertaining to the Kohanim, to the priest, to the Kohen Gadol, to the high priest, at the temple service. And, you know, it goes on to explain the different laws. A Kohen may not become ritually impure through contact with a dead body. A Kohen may not marry a divorcee. A Kohen Gadol cannot marry a divorcee or a widow. And then, you know, it just goes on to the rest of the part of talking about the bringing of the Passover offering, the harvesting, the counting of the Omer, Shavuot, the shofar blowing, the lighting of the menorah in the Holy Temple, so on and so forth. So many different laws that are pertaining to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Holy Temple. One of the interesting things is there's an astonishing and a sobering contrast concerning the nature of the human psyche, which captures our imagination, really, in this week's Torah portion, which really originates and really talks about. Because, as I said, the Torah prohibits a Kohen, a priest, which includes all the descendants of Aaron, from marrying a divorced woman. It also prohibits a Kohen Gadol. Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you, but your phone is noisy.
Yeah, that's I don't know why. Give me 1 second. Hold on. I'm going to maybe just switch to another phone. Sorry, hold on.
Okay. Now it's much better.
That's much better. You see, when you're on cordless phones, one phone may work well, and the other phone not so well.
Okay.
So, let's go back to where we were talking. So we're talking about how, so the Torah prohibits a priest, which includes all the descendants of Aaron, from marrying a divorced woman, and also a Kohen Gadol, the high priest, from marrying a divorcee and a widow. So now, you know, we can perhaps make sense out of the former prohibition, since the priest served as the spiritual agent of the Jewish people in the divine service.
Rabbi, there is too much...
Yes, I don't know if it's something to do with the phone line. How about this? Let me try and call you from my cell phone.
That would be great.
I'm going to call you right back.
Okay. And we'll give it another try. Rabbi?
Hello, Elon.
Oh, now it's... No, we have it again. I think it's our phone here. Okay. I'll try not to move.
Okay, let's try this again. So, we have the prohibition that a Kohen, a high priest, cannot be marrying a divorced woman. A Kohen, the regular priest, sorry. And the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, cannot be marrying a divorcee and a widow. So we might be able to understand, make sense a little bit of this idea that since the priest serves as a spiritual agent for the Jewish people in the divine service, so he was required to live a life of complete innocence and purity. Therefore, the Torah did not want him marrying a person involved in strife, innocent or not, doesn't make a difference. But why could the high priest not marry a widow? What is it about a husband's death, you know, that makes her unqualified to enjoy a blessed relationship with the Jewish high priest?
Yeah.
So there are several answers that are given, and I thought one which is really, really interesting, and it depicts how Judaism does not hide in face from profound struggles and confronting the human life. Do you hear me good, Ilan?
I hear you good, much better than before.
Okay.
I'm standing on the phone.
So there was an 18th century sage. He was known as Reb Chaim Yosef Azulay, the Chida. And he presents an interesting following interpretation. And he says like this. The high priest of Israel was given many great spiritual powers. The most important of them was his duty on the holiest day of the year, Yom Kippur, to enter into the temple's Holy of Holies, Kodesh HaKadashim, a place where no other living Jew was ever allowed to enter. So I'm not sure if you can hear me now, because I'm getting a lot of static on my end.
I can hear you with the static.
Okay.
That's what we got now.
Okay. So on that charge day of the Yom Kippur, the high priest would pronounce the intimate 72-letter name of God, which contained very profound power. It was probably, it's one of the most intimate names of God. Now, the Torah is concerned that the high priest may experience, you know, an extreme love or drawing towards this particular certain married woman, and what he might do about the fact that she's still married was that on Yom Kippur he would utilize that moment when he would utter the 72-letter name of God, and he would think so much in order to bring out a decree of death on her husband. Thus, if the husband dies, he would be free to marry the widow. So it is a result of this concern that the Torah commands that a high priest may not marry a widow, even if he succeeds in getting rid of the husband. Even if he prays very hard, in other words, to get rid of the husband, he still won't be able to marry his wife. And basically, the Torah is basically telling us, do not try pulling this off. It won't get you anywhere.
Now, what if it's the wife of his brother and his brother died?
So then that's a different story. That's something called chalitza. If she wants to get married or not, it's interesting idea if the high priest is even allowed to marry her, because it would still be the concept of a widow. So,
yeah.
In a high priest versus a regular individual person, it would be a totally different.
Case.
Now, if you think about it, it's a really baffling, it's a shocking idea, because on the holiest day of the year, in the holiest place on earth, what are we concerned with? We're concerned that a man designated to serve in the highest spiritual and holiest position of Israel, while uttering the holiest words in the world, might harbor a craving to eliminate an innocent man so that he can marry his wife. How can this be? Maybe she's praying, you know, for the end of the war in the world and peace and health, and he's worrying about this. This is what he's doing. Now, if you go and look, there's another biblical statement concerning the high priest, which enters into the Holies of Holies Yom Kippur, which says like this. That no human being shall be in the tent of meeting when he, the high priest, comes to provide atonement in the sanctuary until he leaves. So not only were, that's the words of the Torah, and not only were there no food, no blintzes or knishes allowed during the Yom Kippur service, but also no Kohen, not even a priest, or no any other people are allowed to be present at the time that the high priest is going into the Holies of Holies. And the Medrash explains this insensitivity, and it says like this, that how can the Bible state that no human being should be present at the time of the high priest service of Yom Kippur, where the high priest himself was a human being? Which means that at least one man was present. And the Medrash answers that when the high priest entered the Holies of Holies, he was not human indeed. He assumed the status of a heavenly angel. Which means then there was no human being that was with him, not even his own. So now, based on this, now we have a very big problem. What is going on here? Where, on one end, we're saying that the potential mind staggering lowness of a high priest capable of descending into the lowest depth, which is that he wants to, that person, he might maybe want to kill that individual person so he can marry that individual person. And then on the other hand, we're saying he's not even a human being, he's an angel. How do we reconcile the two? Who is the high priest? He's the high, the holiest of the holy? Or is he the lowliest, the lowest of the lowly? Which one is he? So, really, Judaism gives us really a moving perspective on the nature of human beings. Because there are two ways in which the Bible, the Torah, speaks of a human being. Because in the first chapter in Genesis, man is described as having been created in the image and the likeness of God. And in the second chapter, later on, man is described as being formed out of the dust of the earth.
Yeah.
So together, image and dust express the nature of man. He is formed of the most inferior stuff in the most superior image. Okay, that sort of makes sense. So the author of life and of mankind, which is obviously God, knew full well that the temptations and desires, desires for another individual person, holds a person, no matter if they're a priest or a man. And there is this powerful grip, and even the greatest of men are capable of falling prey to their temptation. Even a high priest, on the holiest day of the year, in the holiest place in the world, while uttering the holiest word in the world, is capable of thinking thoughts of how he can bump off a man off the road so that what? That he can eventually marry this woman. And Judaism, as we know, has always been sensitive to the truth that every human being has temptations, has desires within them.
Yeah.
And if you don't challenge and tame it every single day, it can turn into a monster. And we are capable of, you know, ugliness in the least expected circumstances. But the author of life, God, also knew that a human being is a person who is capable of incredible greatness. The fact that a soul of man is a piece of God, he or she is capable of generating infinite goodness and encountering within themselves infinite idealism. And we see from this that it is because of us being dust, that God realizes and sees who we are and is willing to also forgive us. So I think something that is so important, this is such a message that he's teaching us, is that the next time that we're overtaken by challenging, you know, craving, temptations, addictions, or any negative feeling, that we should not fall into despair, because remember, we are no worse than the high priest. And we may still struggle against horrible, you know, temptations or desires, but we too are able to enter into the Holy of Holies. It is up to us, each one of us, to define who we are. The rest will become a self-fulfilling prophecy. So God sees it, and God talks to us about it. And there's nothing wrong with it, because God realizes that we're all human beings. And I think that is something so important, that we look at ourselves and say, well, you know, I could be doing this. No. Do what we need to do. We need to work on ourselves, and everything else falls into place if we're willing to do what we have to do. I think that is something that is a very important lesson that we can learn from this week's Torah portion.
Yeah. Rabbi, what about services this weekend?
So we have services Friday evening at 7 o'clock. and Sunday morning is 8:30, followed by breakfast. And Monday, being a holiday, we give everyone a little bit longer to sleep, so we have service at 8:15, and Thursday, 10:15, and it's a great way to start off the day.
It is. I wish you Shabbat Shalom and nice and warm weekend.
You too, and I look forward to talking next week.
Same here. Thank you.
All right, we'll talk to you.
Bye-bye. Bye.